Hi everyone, my name's Helen and I'm a health optimization coach and I trained with Elwyn over the last 3 years and as you all know, he's an absolute wealth of knowledge, so we thought it'd be a really fun idea to be able to question him on subjects that are relevant to us all at the moment. So we're going to do a series of interviews where I get to drill him, ask him questions and really get to the bottom of some subjects, find out some valuable information for us all to optimize and use. So we thought it'd be really fun to do this. And if you'd like to suggest a topic, then please leave a comment in the comment box at the bottom and we can consider these for future interviews. But at the moment, we thought we'd start the first one with something that's relevant to a lot of us at the moment, and that is how to optimize our health in the summer and going into the next season. So to make the most of the time that we're in at the moment and to really improve, optimize, take our health to the next level or deal with any issues that might be coming up for us at the moment. So I'll pass over to Elwyn at the moment to say hello. Hi, Elwyn.
Hi, Helen. Hi.
Hello. Good to have you here.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to do this interview. It's going to be really fun, I know.
Yeah, fantastic. I can't wait. So we're going to start off with what are some really good things that we can do in the summer to, not just to look good, but to feel good and to really make the most of the season to really sort of optimize our health and to take it to the next level and to sort of utilize all the energies that come in the summer to make the most of them. Elwyn, is there a diet that you think is best suited for the summer? Or, would you just like to start on that, please?
Yeah, sure. So I definitely think there is. Obviously it depends a little bit on where you are in the world, right? So right now I'm in a more southerly latitude than I used to be. And so for me, for instance, it becomes all the more pertinent to eat a diet with more cooling foods, and to also actually go for foods which are dispersing. So ironically, often the climates which are the hottest, they have diets full of like chili, which people don't understand. But the reason is because it's actually clearing the heat out of you by making you sweat and hence making you cool down. So that's kind of interesting. But yeah, so to go back to first principles, yes, absolutely. I'm a big, believer in through experience, not kind of belief, the Taoist kind of way of looking at things, and the Taoist way, which is kind of the ancient Chinese way, which is where also acupuncture comes from, where a lot of martial arts comes from, where the Chinese herbs come from, which probably most of you know me from. The Taoist way really emphasizes being in alignment with the forces of nature and the various currents and cycles of nature. So, for instance, this time of the year, this summer, the energies are related to the element of fire, which relates to the organs of the heart and the small intestine. And so, in terms of foods, the foods which kind of correlate and correspond with that particular element are red-colored foods, as well as bitter tasting foods, right? So in order to kind of nourish the heart, we can look to more of those kind of foods. I can give some specific examples in a minute, but I think we can probably all think of a few. Now, as well as that, of course, there are also some practical considerations. First of all, it's really good to eat seasonally, right? So what that means is that if it's growing in an area near you, growing and ripe and ready, in an area near you, then it's a good time to eat it. And if it's not, if you have to export it from halfway across the world, if it does not grow, and even more importantly, would not grow in your climate at the current time of year, then it's not a particularly good thing to eat. And then, like I say, there's also the practical considerations. Like, for instance, where I am these days, like I'm having about a liter of cucumber juice every day. And the reason is that's just to kind of keep my system cool. Whereas if I were living in, say, Scandinavia, even though a litre of cucumber juice would probably still be quite good for me, in the winter in some ways, because it would be alkalizing, because it would be healing for the kidneys, it would be hydrating to some degree, it would be all these good things. But what it would not be, it would not be very helpful from a temperature point of view, right? Because it's very cool. And same with having a large amount of watermelon, which is that's also a very cold kind of temperature food. And, you know, for anyone who doesn't quite know what I'm talking about here, who's unfamiliar with this kind of Eastern idea of, like, foods having their own temperature, irrespective of the kind of degree centigrade, well, the most obvious example of this is probably chili and cucumber, which I just mentioned, right? I mean, go ahead and eat, you know, several raw chilies and then tell me that hasn't affected your body's temperature, right? You're going to feel hot and you're going to be sweating. Well, there isn't quite as an extreme version of that with cold, but I'll tell you, if you're already quite cold in the winter in your country, and then you drink a large amount of cucumber juice, of cucumber straight from the fridge, or even if they're not straight from the fridge, but especially if they are, you will feel the coolness, and you'll feel a lot colder than if you just drank an equivalent amount of water, exactly the same temperature centigrade, right? So an awareness of the temperature of different foods, and then to, you know, have some more cooling food. And of course, that brings the whole conversation in of maybe, you know, generally cooked foods, especially foods that are baked, roasted, things like that, are more warming. Raw foods, especially fruits, vegetables, are more cooling. And so we could get into that whole kind of conversation as well. And anyone who's into the raw foods movement will know that generally it's easier to do the whole eating just raw or eating mainly raw foods in summer, because it's kind of naturally more appropriate. And even those of us who are totally not into the raw foods movement or have never heard of such a thing, we'll still probably notice that we fancy eating salads maybe more, or having a fresh juice more during the summer than we might during the winter. So those are kind of a few of the things that occur to me off the top of my head, Helen.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting, Elwin. And it's interesting in this sort of time that we have of globalization, where everything is available all through the year, and you can go to a supermarket and you can get whatever you want at any time. And then you read a lot of magazines and things like that, and they're giving you a diet plan which says go buy this, go buy this. And it's not generally has any relevance to what is available at the time of the year. And it's really interesting because, as you say, the colors of the heart, the red berries, they're all out. They're in the supermarkets, but they're also in your hedgerows and everything like that. So, it's a very interesting point. So would you say that this diet is sort of applicable to everyone? Or again, would you bring in certain sort of caveats? And, you know, would you say that people are good on 100% raw diet? Or would you say that it's different for different people? What's your perspective on that? Sorry, in the summer, of course, we're talking about.
Yeah, in the summer, yeah. Great question, Helen. I'm really glad you brought that up, because some people hear those kind of principles like I just laid out, and they kind of run with them, which is awesome. You know, I love people who implement. I love people who don't just like talk and talk, who actually go and try stuff and do stuff. So that's great. However, I would add a couple of caveats. First of all, you've got to understand that your internal environment is as important, if not more important, than your external environment, right? And so what do I mean by that? Well, let's give a couple of examples, right? So if you are someone who is maybe naturally very cold, if you were to look in the mirror, for instance, stick out your tongue and you look at your tongue and you can see it's very pale pink, maybe even almost bluish in color, for instance, that's a good sign from a Chinese medicine point of view that you're, although, you know, it's not definitive, don't hold me to it, but it's a good sign from Chinese medicine that you have a tendency to be more cool. Ditto if your pupils of your eyes are pointed more upwards. So you tend to have more of a, like, underneath the zirconia, you have white at the bottom of the eye, but no white at all at the top of the eye. That's another sign of an excess of yin again. So, if you're
I have no idea about that. That's really interesting.
Yeah. So again, neither of those two tests are definitive, but they are like the some of the most reliable indicators that if you go to a Chinese doctor, they might be looking for to see your overall kind of temperament. So if you do have an excess of yin, which relates to cold, as well as water, then you may still not agree with having a large amount of raw foods, with having a large amount of cucumber juice, as the example I gave earlier. There could be lots of other things. If you have a damp spleen specifically, which is the kind of, again, Taoist Chinese medicine kind of a way of saying what we in the West might call leaky gut, or candida, or gut dysbiosis, those kind of things. If you have something like that and you really struggle with digestion, it may, and specifically, you know, from what they, the Ayurvedics, the kind of Indian health system, would call a lack of digestive fire, right? If you lack that digestive fire and your digestion is very sluggish, then pouring a load of, like, very fibrous, especially toughly fibrous, like maybe tough leaves, like raw kale leaves, for instance, or very cooling food on that type of digestion isn't necessarily going to work. So that's one example with internal environment.
In that particular case, in the case of the damp, to get the benefit from the summer foods, but to sort of tailor it to your internal constitution?
It's a complicated one to answer because it depends on lots of different factors. I mean, this is the kind of thing, and again, not to do a plug, but, you know, this is the kind of thing that we go into quite a few hours of training for in Taoist Health Academy, so it's not the kind of thing I can give a definitive answer for. But what we definitely want to do, just as a kind of starting point, and please don't take this to mean, you know, anyone listening, this is all you need to do, but as a starting point, what you might do, for instance, if we just take the juice as an example, so let's say you really want to have some cucumber juice because you know it's really good for you, you know it's good for your kidneys, you know it's going to alkalize you, but you're worried about the fact that you have a damp spleen, your digestion is very sluggish, your digestive fire seems to be very low. One thing you can do, and one thing I like to do, is just to put a little bit of ginger or chili in the juice, as well as some salt as well, salt being very fiery and yang as well. And that will kind of help to balance out the excess of that, the yinness, the coldness and the wetness, without kind of dampening the digestive fire at the same time. So that's kind of more just as an example, right? Like I say, it can be more complex than that in practice. I would probably still, if you're in that position of having a very bad digestion, I would also recommend, here's another kind of simple tip, have things as broken down as possible. So, you know, I wouldn't recommend having, like, just as an example, like a raw kale salad, like a big bowl, like I've seen a lot of raw food people do. Just because, you know, unless, I mean, if you can break it down to some degree by rubbing it in lemon juice and salt and then leaving it for a while, and that helps to kind of pre-digest it a little bit. So, I mean, you know, that would be okay. And certainly if the kale was fermented over the period of several weeks with probiotic bacteria and that broke it down even more, that would be even better. Also, just breaking it down, like, you know, actually having it blended, that would be another way of making it easy for the body to digest. But, yeah, so not to have large amounts of tough fibrous foods. And if you have tough fibrous foods, kind of pre-digest them and break them down as much as possible in various ways. So, like I say, it's probably not a conclusive answer to that question, Helen, but that's like a couple of little tips of things to start with.
Yeah, sure. And I guess that people can try them and they can introduce it and see how they go. And just getting back to sort of basic things that will be able to be sort of utilized by most people. So in the summer, what would you say is the functions that the body is actually trying to carry out?
Yeah, can I give one more example of a time when maybe following the classic advice of what to eat in summer is not appropriate? Because I think this is something that will apply to a lot of people. So the one other thing I wanted to add is the issue of fruits, right? Because naturally, at this time of year, fruits generally, especially exotic fruits, especially the sweet fruits, are the most cooling, like, general category of food, right? So all of them, you know, mango and passion fruit and papaya and pineapple and all of those kind of sweet fruits, they're all very cooling. Now, which is why they grow naturally in hotter climates, because it's nature kind of providing a way for you to cool yourself. So in the summer, it's very tempting to eat more fruits because they're more available, they are more attractive, they're more desirable, they're also cheaper. right, than they are maybe if you go to the supermarket in the winter. So it seems like every reason to eat them. And of course, they're more tempting because they're cooling down your body. We still need to be careful of that because, again, if we do have a damp spleen condition, if we have a situation where we have some kind of infection really going on in the body, it could be a virus, could be most kind of bacterial infections, could be yeast or fungal especially, then we want to be careful with foods that have an excess of sugar. So just to point out that, you know, so the general rule is like eat locally, eat seasonally, eat things which are balancing to your body's energy, but we need to be aware of those few key, few key exceptions, right? And that's definitely one, you know? So, and I say this because I've witnessed a lot of people use that as an excuse, you know? Like if they have a real blood sugar issue, which is another reason, also related to damp spleen, that you wouldn't want to have sweet fruit or a lot of fruit, or if they have some kind of fungal yeast infection that will be fed by that sweet fruit, they say, oh, you know, well, it's a you know, local seasonal piece of fruit, so it must be okay, you know. And just want to say, again, your body's internal environment is probably the more important factor most of the time. So if your body just doesn't agree with sugar, as in this example, then it doesn't matter how local or how seasonal it is, it's probably still not a good idea, unfortunately.
Elwyn, you know, we choose to grow certain things because, you know, they are more sugary, there's more of them about, but, you know, it's an abundance of greens and bitter things and all that sort of thing that grows locally and seasonally in the summer, and that is something that people aren't so keen to add to their diet.
Exactly, Helen, but yeah, probably actually more relevant and more helpful because, as you say, it goes into that kind of bitter taste. So really, yeah, other than fruits, you're absolutely right. The most cooling foods in general are going to be your bitter foods and your greens, absolutely.
Okay, so back to the other question, that, you know, what is your body actually trying to do during the summer and how can we support that with food?
Great question. So obviously your body's trying to do like a million different things in general, but what it's trying to do specifically in summer is two things, to keep, well, I guess just one thing with two specific categories, it's attempting to keep balance, right? Your body's always attempting to stay in balance. It's always attempting to reach homeostasis, which is a kind of active balance rather than a static balance. So the two key factors, I would say, in summer are to keep cool, right? Or at least keep at a good temperature rather than overheating, and to keep hydrated. And so those are the two key factors. And so when we're looking at, you know, kind of what to choose to eat, those are things that we want to be aware of, particularly in the summer. And so, again, this doesn't trump all the things that you want to be doing in general, but in terms of your fine-tuning, and, you know, as you said, these interviews, we're really going to be looking at optimization rather than teaching all the basic stuff that everyone else already teaches, right? We're looking at, you know, adding some sophisticated something to add some real value to our listeners and not to tell them things they've already heard 100 times before. So in terms of, so those are the two factors that we want to, you know, particularly look for fine-tuning in summer. So we want to ask ourselves when we're selecting the constituents of a meal, and anyone who knows, you know, my work will know that I'm not an advocate or supporter of snacking and just picking at things throughout the day, right? I really recommend meals and giving your digestion a good chance to have a break in between meals. So anyway, assuming that we're doing that, when we are selecting a meal, we want to look and ask ourselves, okay, so, and it depends. If we're a positive kind of motivated person, we might ask ourselves, okay, so what can I add in here which is hydrating? And what can I add in here which is cooling? And if we are more of a negative motivated person, if we're more of a moving away person, we can ask ourselves the same question in reverse and go, okay, what can I remove from this meal I was planning to do, which is going to dry me out? And what can I remove from this meal I was planning to do that is going to overheat me? So in either sense, we could look at those two key factors over the summer. And these are relevant, by the way, even if you don't feel particularly hot. I mean, like where I am right now at the moment, it's so hot that I'm kind of sweating even when I'm not doing anything. So that's pretty hot, obviously. You may well not be in that position. And yet still, you may notice that you may not notice, but if you really consider it, you may become aware that your brain isn't functioning as well right now as it would at a different point of year, right? So maybe even though in your body you feel quite comfortable because you're in a climate or an environment where you're used to feeling cold, and now you're in the summer and you're not, and you're very happy about that, and obviously that's awesome. But maybe your thinking process has slowed down, or maybe you're struggling a little bit more memory, you know? Or maybe it's nothing like that. Maybe for you it shows up in agitation, right? So maybe it's some kind of skin agitation, so it could be a physical agitation, or maybe, or inflammation, something like that. Or it could show up in an emotional sense. So maybe you're more impatient. Maybe you're more easily frustrated. Maybe you're more quick-tempered, you know? There's the idea that that riots go on a lot more during a heat wave than any other time, right? So these are all kind of different signs and symptoms of an excess of fire, as the Taoists would put it. And so all things that we want to, you know, watch out for. So just to say, you know, even if you're someone who's like, oh, I never feel hot, Elwin, I never feel warm, none of this applies to me. Well, you may not feel hot or warm, but you may still feel the signs of excess fire anyway. And so those are things that we want to, keep an eye on to really get to the best levels of functioning.
Yeah, that's really useful. I mean, I live in a holiday area, and you see in the summer the road rage going on. And obviously it's a bit more crowded, but it's not terrible because it's in the middle of nowhere. But, you know, people are less able to cope with their emotions because of the heat. So I guess, yeah, pints of cucumber juice all around for people in their cars.
Yeah, and remembering that, the element of fire that we're talking about here repeatedly relates to the organ of the heart, right? So exactly like you say, it's not just people are more likely to be angry, but people are more emotional in general, absolutely right. Because the heart is overstimulated, you know? And so, and so just to look at that overstimulation of the heart thing for a second. So there is one category of foods which are bitter tasting and which are related to the heart, but which stimulate the heart. And so therefore, summer is the worst time to have these particular, well, you know, I call them drugs, but most people call them foods. And that would be things like coffee, guarana, chocolate, yerba mate, yeah. I guess would come in that category as well. They're all things that are bitter, and they're all related to the heart. They're all cardiac stimulants, to use the technical term, as well as, you know, other kinds of stimulants, used adrenal stimulants as well. And they're all going to make that kind of situation worse, right? So I would... You know, and again, I know I'm not going to make myself popular with this message. I could have just not mentioned it, but, I'm here to help, provide you the information you need, do with it what you will. But you may well find in terms of that quest to maintain balanced and level-headed and centered and totally healthy and present and all those things that I know all of you listening are really into, that those substances, they're probably not helping you at the best of times, but they're definitely not helping you particularly during the time in the summer when you're most likely to overheat and to specifically have your heart organ system overheat.
Mm. And summer, it's a time when we all feel sort of really creative and we can produce a lot of good work or we feel very connected to ourselves because we're not struggling so much with the balance. And then if we sort of push it too far the other way, then we can go sort of into overdrive, can't we, and exhaust ourselves, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean...
Or alcohol as well, Elwin, you know, everyone's sitting out on their patios, you know, having a few glasses of wine. That is so overheating.
Definitely, yeah. Again, I wouldn't categorise it as a food, so often it doesn't occur to me. But yes, you're absolutely right. Yeah, definitely. It's, exactly the same principle, exactly. And yeah, I mean, I'm mainly focusing on the potential dangers here because that's kind of the path of optimization, isn't it? It's like, you know, avoiding the pitfalls and fine tuning. But you're absolutely right. I mean, this is, it's a very good time of year in a lot of ways, especially for those people who are passionate and creative or who want to be passionate and creative, because it's where, like, you're most likely to be in tune with all those good elements of the fire energy.
Yeah, absolutely. And thinking about, you know, the heart and its connection with the small intestine as well. So the summer's quite a good time to sort of help our small intestine and to clear things out as well. Is that right?
Yeah, excellent. Thank you for reminding me of that, Helen. Yeah, that's another really important thing to think about. So our small intestine is this very long, very thin tube relevant to the large intestine, at least. And it's also kind of, it's not like a rubber hose kind of, it's kind of very uneven surfaced and knobbly and all the rest of it. And it's beautifully adapted to eat a natural diet. However, most of us do not eat a natural diet, even though maybe a lot of people listening to this, maybe you do now, but you haven't most of your life. And so most people's small intestine is overloaded and kind of blocked up with stuff to some degree. Now, there's a bit of controversy about this in the alternative health world. Some people, you know, say it's, you know, very severely blocked. Some people say it's less. I think we can all agree at least that there's some kind of level blockages in there. And so the summer is just a perfect time of year to show us, not that it's not appropriate to do this any time, but it's especially appropriate in summer to show our small intestine some love and give it a break. And this might be giving it a break in terms of doing like a day or two, maybe, or even just an afternoon, you know, in terms of a juice fast, right? So this could be as simple as you have breakfast, and then like the rest of the day you only have juice, and then you go to bed, and then you eat normally again the next day. This could be as simple as you wake up and you just have juice all day, and then you go to bed, and then you eat normally again. This it could even be that you do a juice fast for a few days, and it could even be that you go full on into what I call a small intestine cleanse, which a lot of people refer to as a colon cleanse, inaccurately, from my perspective, which is where we're actually specifically taking a kind of protocol to clear out the stuck debris of waste that gets stuck and then attracts opportunistic organisms in the small intestine. Because to me, I think this is one of the roots of that damp spleen condition. It actually it often roots from the small intestine. And this is the Dow's perspective that the small intestine, what we call the guts, you know, the area around the navel, for anyone who's unfamiliar with exactly where that is in the body. So that area kind of around the navel, that's the, it also has its own intelligence. We actually have that small intestine. In fact, recent scientific research has discovered our whole intestinal tract, but specifically the small intestine has its own neurons, which are the kind of brain cells. So it has its own intelligence. And that intelligence and that awareness can really get bogged down when we are just constantly eating. And most of us, we not only do we eat a bad diet, that's what most of us focus on, right? We're like, you know, oh, we should eat better food. That's what I hear all the time in the alternative health world. What I see a lot less often, but it's also very important, is it's not just what you eat, it's also when you eat, how much you eat, and how often you eat, right? These are all crucial factors as well. And so I think that even if you eat a very healthy diet, or you know, what you consider to be a very healthy diet in terms of the content, but you're eating at the wrong time, so especially you're eating large amounts late at night, if you're eating too frequently, so you're eating, like, you're just grazing all day, or maybe if you're eating large amounts every couple of hours, I don't know, many people do, these are all things that are going to overload the small intestine, right? So yes, it's bad food, but it's also incorrect eating of various types. Even if you're eating perfectly in every way, if one of your other digestive organs isn't working well, like for instance, if your pancreas is maybe overloaded through a lot of sugar or acidity, if your liver is overloaded by a lot of fat or a lot of toxicity, you know, various other options. If any part of the digestion is overloaded, then the small intestine is often the area that suffers the most. So just to give your small intestine a break over summer, that was going to be my original point, right? Even if it's just a little fast. And remember, you know, a lot of the reason why people don't like to do a juice fast, other than, of course, that they want to eat. But specifically, it's because having a lot of juice is very cooling, right? Also because they feel very low in energy. Well, summer, you know, we naturally get more energy, which we feel from the sun, and we naturally feel warmer from the sun and from the summer. So it's a perfect time to just do some kind of juice fast, some kind of small intestine cleanse. Now, just a caveat for that, I'll just give you, I don't recommend just doing that if you don't have experience of doing it successfully. And, of course, that's what my Complete Detox Academy program is all about. It's really guiding you on detoxing safely and step by step. And that's where we have a small intestine cleansing protocol as well. So if you're not experienced in doing that successfully, then I'd recommend that you check that out. I think probably most people listening to this are, though, you know, experienced in doing that successfully. So I'm just giving you a little reminder that at this time of year, that's a perfect time to do something like that.
And I love the fact that you say that, you know, that you can do a half day juice cleanse for a few days. I'm a big fan of that because I've got, you know, small children. So I you know, need to keep my energy quite consistent. And I find, you know, having a good breakfast and then having juice for the rest of the day a really good way to achieve that and to feel clear. And I think, you know, a lot of people think there's one way to do things. And, you know, one thing I love about your work is that you don't say that. You're very happy to tailor it to people's individual needs and situations and, yeah, their internal ecosystem and everything. So I think that's really wonderful.
Thank you. And I'll just say, this is one of the reasons as well, like when I refer people to a coaching program, a lot of the time they're like, well, you know, it's quite a lot of commitment. But I always want to, you know, emphasize the reason why I do that specifically with a detox thing is because it's not about, you know, follow this 1-2-3-step process. Because if you try and do that, if you're lucky, then it'll work for you. And that's great, you know. And, you know, for all the other people out there who are like offering the 7-day detox plan or the 30-day detox kit or whatever, all these kind of things, for most people it won't work. And for a few people it will. And then those are the people that hold up as examples to say, look, it works. but it won't work. Not because there's anything wrong with these people or their trainings. It's all great. It's because everyone's different, so different. And yes, there are some universal principles, but especially when it comes to something like detox, it's kind of highly personalized and highly individualized. So when I say, you know, like the Detox Academy is going to have the answers for you, I don't mean because, you know, it's just another cleanse, which is like step 1-2-3 and just follow it. I mean because it is an interactive coaching program where, you know, you'll get some, you know, guidance, obviously, but then also, you know, we're kind of working out together as and when need be to really get it right for you. So in your case, Helen, as you said, you know, because you're a busy working mother, you want to make sure that you have something which keeps your energy stable consistently. So you can't just do a week's juice cleanse. And maybe it's also your body, right? I mean, I know some people who can do a week's juice cleanse and feel consistent energy and carry on working. I don't recommend that, but I know some people who do it and seem to do it very well. So, like, everyone is different. And so it's working out exactly what's right for you that's really important.
Yeah. And I like that, yeah, we celebrate the difference. It isn't something to be, you know, you don't have to become this perfect person who this one way works for. You're different and you're fine just as you are. And that's really wonderful. and the other thing I thought was really interesting about what you said was about the neurons in your gut. And how we eat and things like that. And I was thinking that, you know, we have this modern day malaise where everyone feels disconnected and, you know, there's more depression, even though we've more abundance, more everything, you know, people are more depressed, people are feeling more lost. And, you know, it strikes me that sort of clearing your gut brain might help to sort of reconnect you with, your being, your true emotions, because you're not sort of dampening them down or covering them up or, you know, all sorts of reasons. I don't know what you think about that, Elwin.
I'd say it's definitely a crucial and unskippable first step in that process. Mm. And so the reason why I say it that way is, this is a big subject. I don't think it's like within the scope of this interview. Though, if people really want to hear about this, we could do another interview on that. You know, depression in modern society and happiness and all that kind of thing. But just like suffice it to say that from a Taoist point of view, which is the point of view again I've found in practice, I've tried all kinds of systems. I don't think the Taoist system is like the one and only perfect system or anything like that, but it's the one that I generally have as a go-to system as being so actually useful and effective in practice. So from that kind of perspective, clearing away the gut brain and the gut area, it relates more to the instincts and intuition and your sense of inner knowing than it does maybe to emotions like love or guilt or compassion or anything like that. And the reason what the Tao should say is to work on that gut brain first so that you can start to feel centered, grounded, present, that you can really be in reality, that you can really be in your body, that you can come from a place of strength, confidence, those kind of things. And then from there, you can maybe move up more to the heart and which is obviously connected to the gut in numerous ways, including, you know, as we said here, the small intestine and the heart are both the same organ system. So then you can start looking more at the heart and the emotions and stuff like that, and really clearing those from the safety of knowing that you have a firm foundation to be able to handle all that stuff, right? Because the idea is that, you know, most of us who have those emotional issues, which, as you say, Helen, is probably most of us in modern day society, you know, the reason why we have these emotions that kind of we haven't been able to deal with or we don't know how to handle, and, you know, usually from the past, is, you know, for numerous reasons, but one of them, the reason we're kind of blocking them is a survival mechanism, right? And so we need to feel really safe, and we need to feel really secure, and we need to feel really strong before we can even start dealing with any of that kind of stuff in a way that's actually effective, right? You can dive into all that kind of thing anyway with various kind of practices or techniques or systems or whatever, but I've met a lot of people who've gone into that kind of thing with psychiatry, psychotherapy, with various kinds of therapies, body therapies, you know, all kinds of things. And what I've noticed is when they are not centered and grounded and feeling safe, so when they haven't got that gut thing sorted first, often it makes their life worse and not better. And
yeah,
so,
I totally back that up, Elwyn. That's exactly what I've seen. But as you say, it's a whole topic in itself. So I think we've reached our time, so I just ask if there's anything else you'd like to add, and then maybe wrap up.
No, I think that's it in the area of, you know, summer eating. The last thing that I'll just add is to really honour your own gut instinct, right, to get back to the same point and to, you know, relate it back to the original topic. The challenge with listening to your body is that the more unhealthy you and imbalanced your body is, the more that tends to send you signals which are inaccurate. So that's the challenge. And that's why it's a good idea to have teachers and mentors and coaches and guidance and all the rest of it from someone who has had a similar challenge to you and has overcome it, because they are going to be able to give you that guidance when your body's signals are not that accurate yet. But I will say that the ultimate goal that we're looking at aiming towards, and, you know, really as soon as possible, is to get our body to a point of health and vitality and balance as quickly as possible, where it is sending you reliable signals and you can listen to it, you know. So if your body is regularly sending you signals for, you know, let's say coffee, and then, you know, that leaves you kind of hot and sweaty and agitated in the summer, for instance, and then crashed out and all that kind of thing, then okay, maybe don't listen to your body about that particular thing, right? But if you're just, you know, walking along and you notice this kind of fresh juice bar, and you're like, oh, I really fancy some of that, maybe don't have the juice bar, you know, don't drink from the juice bar if actually they're just offering you a load of sugary fruits and that's not good for your body. But still make note of that instinct. And, you know, get home or get somewhere else where you can make a decent juice and then follow up on it and make yourself a decent juice that actually is good for you, right, with some, not just fruit, but maybe some vegetables in as well, or maybe actually just vegetables or mainly vegetables. And just really, so even though you can't always listen to your body, maybe it's not always 100% reliable, maybe it does seem to be, you know, prompting you for things which are not going to be good for you. So even though that may be the case some of the time, I understand, as much as possible, listen to it, you know. So if it's sending you a signal for olives, for instance, or if it's sending you a signal for, you know, spicy food, or if it's sending you a signal for fatty food even, or something like that, you know, listen as much as possible and come up with a best fit, you know. So if you're looking at, like, bacon and you're like, oh, salivating, but, you know, bacon isn't good for you because of the nitrates and whatever, you know, think to yourself, okay, well, I can't have that, but maybe what I really crave is salty, fatty food. So what can I make for myself right now that's salty and fatty and still, so that serves that basic want, but, you know, that's not bad for me, right? That's just an example, obviously. Maybe that wouldn't satisfy it for you, but often that's actually what it is. It's, you know, salt and fat, and specifically saturated fat, you know? So in that case, you might want to go for whatever you eat. Basically, you can add some coconut oil and add some salt. And then, oh, that's that craving satisfied, right? So the point I'm trying to get to is, you know, as a general final thought, Don't like just do whatever your body tells you indiscriminately. Obviously, you know, sometimes you have to intervene with your common sense and your experience and your memory that, oh, when I do this, it doesn't work for me. But as much as possible, when your body gives you signals, when your gut specifically is giving you signals, well, I want this, try and, you know, heed its advice as much as possible, even if you need to adjust it a little bit.
Yeah, sure. And the thing is, if you eat that bacon sandwich or whatever, then you notice what's going to go on in your body. You might enjoy it for, you know, a little while. I don't know, I'm vegetarian, so. But after, you're probably going to notice some sort of reaction in your body that makes you feel a bit yucky or something. Whereas if you go for the healthier option, then again, notice if you feel optimized, if you don't have that crash, if you feel like you've done something good for your body. And I think the more you become aware of that, the more you'll start making the right decisions for you based on your own knowledge, which is, like as Elwin said, the ultimate goal of all this, to not have someone tell you what to do, but to know for yourself. So, yes, I guess we can wrap this up here for this week. And as I said at the start, if you would like to suggest a topic or you have any specific questions that you'd like us to cover, then leave a comment below and we will do our best to answer them. Can't promise, but, yeah, absolutely. Please give us your feedback and your input. And thank you very much, Elwin.
Yeah, I want to second that, Helen. Just say, you know, please do put a comment underneath here. You know, it just makes my day, it makes Helen's day, and it makes us motivated to do this and to do a better job. So if you've enjoyed this, if you're still listening to this, I hope it's because you've got a lot of value for this, then please leave a little comment, right? If you have a question or anything like that, absolutely leave that. Even if you don't, just to, you know, say, you know, I enjoyed that. We love to hear that. So please let us know. We really appreciate it.
Awesome. Okay, see you all next time. Bye.
Bye.